All right, so we're going to do a quick bird 10,000 feet review of where we're at in this particular chapter, because we are in the middle of a subject, so I just want to be able to sort of start from the beginning. We are in the middle of chapter f we started chapter 5, which is Bnei Yisrael just crossed over the Jordan River, the whole story of the split of the Jordan River and all that went with it. We talked about at length, and we enter into the land of Israel on the 10th of Nisan. That's the date that is written in the text, and we are 4 days before Pesach, before the Korban Pesach, which is on the 14th, and that's where we pick up the text. So I'm going to share my screen. Again, if you have a chance to keep your cameras on, it's helpful. We are, as I get to see you over here, so we're still good. Yeshua chapter 5. And the first thing that happens when he enters, literally, they walk over, they cross over into the land of Israel, and there's this introductory statement about how all the nations of Canaan are fearful, are melt, their hearts are melting, etc. But our story picks up in Pasuk Bet. Ve'etahi amar Hashem al Yeshua, Aseh lecha charvot tzurim, v'shuv mol et bnei Yisrael shenit. Go, God says to Yeshua, make flint knives and circumcise all of the children of Israel. It's the 10th of Nisan. They're about to bring the Korban Pesach. At the end of the chapter, there is a requirement that you have to be circumcised, at least the males have to be circumcised to be able to join in the Korban Pesach. And there's a reason why that needs to be done here. We'll see that in a second. Ve'yas lo Yeshua charvot tzurim, ve'yamol et bnei Yisrael el givat ha'aralot. And so, in fact, that's what he does, and he circumcises all of Israel. Why is it necessary? Ve'zeh ha'davar ha'shamal Yeshua. Kol ha'am ha'yotzei mimitzrayim ha'zcharim, kol anshei ha'melchama metu b'midbar b'derech b'tzitam mimitzrayim. The generation that left Egypt, they were circumcised when they left Egypt. They had to have been because they had a Korban Pesach. And that's one of the things that we'll see in this chapter, is that the Torah is very clear that in order to be able to partake of the Korban Pesach, you have to be circumcised, or you have to be part of a community, a nation that is identified by circumcision. The pasuk in Shemot, Perek Yudbet, that talks about the requirements of the Korban Pesach, makes it very clear that even a sojourner, even a ger, who brings a Korban Pesach, imola kol zachar kol arel lo yochabal. You can't have, if you have a uncircumcised male, intentionally so, meaning they are they're not, we're not, we'll get to some of the technicalities, they may not partake of the Korban Pesach. And so in our context, Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim, they were circumcised. The people who left Egypt, they were circumcised. It says so explicitly in Pasuk K. Whereas, and this is our starting point for our discussion, b'derech, lo, but Bnei Yisrael, who entered into the land of Israel, who the next generation that were born in the desert, they were not circumcised. 40 years they walked in the desert. Ad tom kol agoy anshei mechama, till that generation was gone, the generation that left Egypt. For the story of the spies, etc. Ved bnehem, their children, the next generation, are now entering into the land of Israel. Hakim tachtam motam al Yeshua. They're the ones that Yeshua had to circumcise in order for them to be able to bring the Korban Pesach. Pasuk tet. Vayomer Hashem al Yeshua, Hayom galoti et cherpat Mitzrayim mealechem. I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt, the shame of Egypt, from upon you. Talk about what that is in a moment. And therefore they name the place Gilgal, from the phrase galoti, to roll away. Vayachanu b'nei Yisrael b'Gilgal, they encamped there at Gilgal. Vayasua ta Pesach be'arba'as hayom l'chodesh be'erev be'avot Yirecho. And there they brought the Korban Pesach on the 14th of Nisan. And they also ate of the produce of the land from the next day, ve'yochlu mi'avu aratz mi'mochvat ha'pesach, matzot v'kalui be'etzem ha'yom hazeh. So there is no question the text links their experience of the circumcision to their ability to bring the Korban Pesach. The juxtaposition here is striking. It's also by date. But this is the question that we started to explore, and we're going to explore in more detail now, is how did it come about that Bnei Yisrael that left Mitzrayim were circumcised, but Bnei Yisrael who entered into the land of Israel were uncircumcised? What does that mean? Why is that the case? So for that, we're going to turn to our source page, which I will now put in the chat. I sort of waited until there was a group of people. So all right, there is the source page. We will open it up in a moment on the screen. Somebody asked me about the word shenit. Where is the word shenit? Oh, that is a really good question. Verse 2. Shuv mol et bnei Yisrael shenit. Circumcised bnei Yisrael a second time. That is a really exceptional observation, because what it reflects is exactly the thesis that we're going to start to explore, which is that bnei Yisrael on a national scale, not individually, but on a national scale, needed to undergo circumcision before they left Egypt. That's exactly the verse in Shemot Perek Yud Bet that they had to circumcise themselves. They had a Korban Pesach in Mitzrayim, they had to be circumcised. Why it was necessary to circumcise themselves in Mitzrayim, we'll see. We're going to explore those issues. But therefore now is the second time in the history of Bnei Yisrael that they've done a national circumcision on a broad scale. That's a thing from the reference to Shenit. All right, but let's go into the question first as to why it was that they didn't circumcise themselves for 40 years in the desert. The mitzvah Brit Milah was given to Abraham. Certainly the mitzvah Brit Milah they knew about. And they would have had to have had a Brit Milah, even if they didn't know about it, even if that tradition had been lost. Let's assume for the moment, we'll offer some other explanation. But certainly by the time they were in Mitzrayim, Shemot Perek Yud Bet, when they brought the Korban Pesach, and it says, V'chol arel lo yochal ba, none who are uncircumcised can partake of the Korban Pesach, they certainly knew that they had to have circumcision there, and we'll see the sources that say that they did. They were circumcised when they left. So why didn't they circumcise themselves through the time of the desert? So this question is addressed in the Gemara in Yevamot. And the Gemara says the following. Bamidbar my time lo mahu. Why didn't they perform the mitzvah of Brit Milah in all the years they were in the desert? Ibait ema mishum chulsha d'urcha. You could say it was because the journey, the weariness of the journey, meaning they were traveling. And if they were traveling, it's very difficult to stop and to do circumcision and then to wait for them to be healed, etc. So the Gemara offers the possibility that they didn't fulfill the mitzvah of Brit Milah because they were traveling. V'ibayit Ema, another possibility, mishum delo nashiv lehu ruach tzvonit. They did not have a north wind blow for them all those years. Now, this is based on the notion that, and the Rashi explains it, I didn't put it on the page, that the north wind is a kind of gentle wind. It's a kind of a calming wind. Unless you live in the United States, and then the wind that blows to the north is very cold because it comes from Canada. So every time there's a cold front we call it a Canadian front that comes through. The Canadian front, in Canada, they used to call it an Arctic front. Always blame those who live to the north of us. But nonetheless, that is the notion that the north wind is a kind of a calming or healing wind. So for all the 40 years that we were in the desert, that wind didn't blow, and therefore they never had what they considered necessary circumstances or conditions to be able to do Brit Milah safely. So says the Gemara, the first opinion in the Gemara. We're going to unpack this in a second. Ditanya. Yeah, does somebody have a question?
Yeah, doesn't it say that they traveled based on when Hashem told them to move? So how would they know when they would have 3 days for healing?
Okay, same, more or less the same question.
Yeah.
Okay, so... I could offer an answer to that question, but let's go a little further and we'll see the variables here.
I have a different question.
Yeah.
I mean, we know that they spent 19 years in one place in Kadesh Barnea. They weren't traveling the whole time. So why couldn't they do a Brit Milah?
They spent 19 years in Kadesh Barnea, but every day they could have possibly moved. In other words, they didn't know that they were going to be in Kadesh Barnea for 19 years. The notion was whenever the cloud would move, they would be ready to travel. So, but at no point did God ever say to them, okay, we're going to stay here for 6 months. We're going to stay here for 19 years, right? They were ready to move on a daily basis. That was also part of the test of their faith, like the man, right? They had a daily portion. So that also was part of that nisaya. Nonetheless, I think all these questions come to the same question, same basis, which the Gemara's language here reflects a different application of the same question. I can ask the question differently. If God wanted them to circumcise themselves, would he couldn't bring a north wind for 40 years? In 40 years they had bad weather? Maybe for 40 years you couldn't tell them once every year, wait for 3 days so that everybody can circumcise themselves? There's something deeper here, clearly. So that's what the Gemara goes on, and he says, "Tanya, kol otan abayim shana shayu yisuba midbar lo nashva lehem ruach tzvanit." For all those 40 years, the north wind didn't blow. My taima, why is that the case? So here the Gemara offers two answers, which I think are essentially the same answer. Yibayit ema mishum din nizufim havu, because they were under censure. They were rejected. They were pushed away. Alternatively, you could say the north wind didn't come because God didn't want the north wind to disperse the clouds of God's glory, right? Disperse the cloud. Which, again, it's like such a weird answer because we're not talking about rain clouds. We're not talking about nice little white fluffy clouds. We're talking about the Ananea Kavod that were created by the Esh. The Esh burnt and the fire that went off of it created smoke. The smoke was the Ananea Kavod. The fire represented the Shekhinah. What do you mean? The north wind is going to blow out the clouds of God's glory? It's extraordinary. So the bottom line is that all of these answers, whether they couldn't wait for 3 days to circumcise, or the Ruach Tzvonit that didn't blow because they were under censure, or because God didn't want dispersal. All of these answers really reflect one basic principle. And that's this notion, the Nezufim Hayu. They didn't circumcise themselves because they were under censure. What does it mean they were under censure? Says Rashi, Mimaseh HaEgel. They were under censure from the sin of the golden calf. And therefore, lo hayu u'yin la'or noga, they weren't worthy of that north wind, of that chush, of that journey, of that they weren't worthy of Brit Milah. Let's put it on the table. Because now, what's interesting is that Rashi doesn't say it's because of the sin of the spies. Rashi takes us all the way back to the sin of the golden calf. But at the end of the day, what the Gemara is really saying, right? For you have to have an extraordinary amount of direct divine providence and intervention to make sure that, quote, the north wind didn't blow for 40 years. In other words, whatever the answer is, the real answer is that God didn't let them circumcise themselves. The real question is why. God didn't let them fulfill the mitzvah of Brit Milah. And the real question is why.
So no Korban Pesach?
Wait. Hold. Okay. Bamidbar Perek Tet. Let's quick look at Bamidbar Perek Tet. What is Bamidbar Perek Tet? Sorry, I didn't prepare that one in advance. Let's do that. Take one of these tabs. Let's do that here. Whoops. Let's just do this here. Bamidbar, Perek Tet. Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe b'midbar Sinai b'shana hashenit l'tzitam me'eretz Mitzrayim b'chodesh harishon lemor. God spoke to Moshe in the desert in the second year of the Exodus from Egypt, meaning it's they left on Nisan. Now we're at Nisan a year later. Vayasu b'nei Yisrael et haPasach b'moado. B'nei Yisrael fulfilled the mitzvah of Korban Pesach on the 14th of Adar, etc. of Nisan. Then there's the whole story about people who weren't able to bring the Korban Pesach because they were Tamei, and so they had to bring a Pesach Sheni, and this is the mitzvah of Pesach Sheni was given. Okay. Rashi says something extraordinary on this phrase. Let's look at it this way. Ubeparasha Sheberosh HaSefer lo ne'emra adiya. Beginning of Sefer Bamidbar starts with the month of Iyar. The census and the travel from Hasinai is in the month of Iyar. We've gone back in time. By chapter 9, we're going back to a month beforehand, to the month of Nisan. Says Rashi, Lama lo patach bazu, why didn't the Torah start, if Bamidbar starts the second year, why didn't it start with the month of Nisan? Why are the chapters out of order? Says Rashi, based on the Gemara, Mipnei shehi gnutan shel Yisrael, because this was a disparaging moment for Israel. This was a negative moment, a mark on their record. Shekol 40 shana shayu bamidbar lo hikrivu ela pesach ze bilvad. If all the 40 years they were in the midbar, they brought one korban pesach in the second year, month of Nisan, a year after they left Egypt, before Chet HaMeraglim, before the story of Korach and Shlach and all the parashiyot of Sefer Bamidbar, they brought one korban pesach. Why didn't they bring Korban Pesach in year 3? Why didn't they bring Korban Pesach in year 4? You understand what Rashi's implying? Is that they didn't bring a Korban Pesach for all those 40 years. Now, you could say it's because they weren't circumcised. That was the question that was just asked, right? They weren't circumcised. So, if they weren't circumcised, they couldn't bring a Korban Pesach. But, honestly, ask yourself the question differently. Who wasn't circumcised in year 3? Who wasn't circumcised in year 3? B'nai Israel, when they left Egypt, were all circumcised. We take that as a granted.
The babies.
Only the babies.
The babies. So how many babies were born? Well, the rest of B'nai Israel could not participate in the Korban Pesach because a handful of babies were born that year. And year 4, I understand in year 20, in year 30, in year 40, year 30, so that generation that left Egypt were dying out. And the new generation wasn't circumcised because, as we said before, they weren't allowed to be circumcised, yet to be determined why. But the Korban Pesach, they're all circumcised on the day they left Egypt. So why couldn't they bring the Korban Pesach in year 3, and in year 4, and in year 5? Well, because of a handful of babies? What's the answer? Now put the two questions together, and you come up with an extraordinary insight, which is that in the aftermath of Chet HaMeraglim, when the Gezerah was decreed that this generation that left Egypt would not enter into the land of Israel, it was as if the Brit with Bnei Yisrael, the covenant that God entered with Bnei Yisrael in Egypt, had become null and void. And that's why Rashi links it to Chet HaEgel, combined with Chet HaMeraglim, the two major sins of Bnei Yisrael in the desert, they are nizufim, says the Gemara. They were censured. They were rejected. That generation, when God said they'll die in the Midbar, it didn't just mean we're going to wait it out. It means for all intents and purposes, God had rejected them. The Brit was null and void. The Brit was now over with them.
How could be, but they still had Brit Milah, and they had Brit Ben Aptarim. They had all these Britot.
So it's going to wait. But Brit Milah they lost. And that's exactly the point. Brit Milah they lost. They had the ability to do Brit Milah in Mitzrayim. The moment we go past Chet Egel and Chet Meraglim, the Gemara says, God arranged the circumstances such that they could not circumcise themselves. They lost Brit Milah. And because they lost Brit Milah for the individual babies that were born on a national scale, they also lost Korban Pesach, even though they were circumcised. But the two are connected. The notion is not that the practicality that because they can't fulfill, the north wind doesn't blow, therefore they can't bring the Korban Pesach. It's much more profound. It's much more profound. They are not allowed to fulfill the mitzvah Brit Milah, and they're not allowed to fulfill the mitzvah Brit of Korban Pesach. The two anchors of the Brit between God and Israel was removed from them in the aftermath of the sin of the golden calf and the sin of the spies. They were now under censure, says the Gemara, Nezufimavu. They were rejected. They were outside of the Brit. They were going to wait a generation. Now, the Brit's not canceled, right? We're not like... It's not like supersessionism, a theology of Christianity that we're going to choose a new nation. We're going to wait one generation. But that generation that left Egypt is now no longer eligible for the signs, for the foundational mitzvot of the Brit, namely Brit Milah and Korban Pesach. How do you arrange that? One second. How do you arrange that? You arrange that by making sure that the circumstances around Brit Milah are impossible to fulfill. And by definition, a nation that can't fulfill the mitzvah of Brit Milah, even if they're already circumcised, but because they can't do the mitzvah, they can't bring the Korban Pesach. Those are facts. Those are what the Gemara, the Rashi, it's based on the Gemara. Rashi quotes it in Bamidbar. They didn't bring a Korban Pesach. And the Gemara says explicitly they didn't bring, and the Pasuk says, the Pasuk says, I didn't make this up, Kimulima Yukol Ama Yotzim, the nation that left Egypt was circumcised, but because the 40 years in the desert, the nation that was born in the desert was not circumcised. It also explains the significance of Pasuk Tet. Vayomer Hashem al Yoshua, Hayom galoti et chepat mitzvayim mealecha. Today I have rolled away the reproach of Egypt by giving you back the mitzvah of circumcision. I have removed from you the shame of Egypt. What's the shame of Egypt? Chepat mitzvah. It's a huge machloket in the Gemara, in the Mefarshim, what this word, phrase refers to. Were the Egyptians not circumcised, and therefore the Jews that were not circumcised looked like Egyptians? Or was it something else? What's Chepat Mitzrayim? Right. So the Mefarshim suggests, for example, Radak, Sheyatzu Ha'avot Mitzrayim. Right. The fathers who left Egypt were circumcised. Hayu Habanim Arelim, but the children who were born in the desert were not circumcised. Kimo HaMitzrim, like Egyptians, were uncircumcised. Ve'ha'ola Chepa. And the Orla is called a cherpa, as it says by Shem ki cherpa ilanu, meaning that somehow this notion of being uncircumcised throughout the years in the desert, from year two and on, is called cherpat Mitzrayim. And the other possibility of their simple explanation is that that's exactly the Brit that we're talking about. That by virtue of Chet Egel and Chet Meraglim, the Gezerah that they would die in the wilderness means that that generation was written off. That generation doesn't have the status of being part of the Brit with God. And therefore the mitzvot that represent that Brit, namely Brit Milah and Korban Pesach, were removed from them. It's fascinating. Even Korban Pesach, which they could have fulfilled because they were physically circumcised, but they were denied that opportunity by virtue of the fact that God said, okay, you can't circumcise your children, therefore you are, what in Hebrew we'd call netulei brit, right? You are removed or denied the privilege of that brit because of the circumstances related to Chet Meraglim.
This echoes the inability of the refusal of Moshe Rabbeinu to circumcise one of his sons.
That's a whole different parasha, which I'm not sure is relevant. I'd have to analyze it, but in this case, it's not about refusal, it's about denied. Right? They were B'nai Yisrael with denied the opportunity.
But it perhaps explains the sin of Moshe Rabbeinu delaying circumcision.
That's a whole different parasha, which maybe. I'll leave it as an open question.
It's interesting that the last thing that the assimilated Jews seem to give up is Pesach.
Yeah, and Milah, by the way.
Right.
And Milah. Because they are signs of the covenant between God and Israel, and they are anchored in that ethos of the covenant with God. We're going to talk about why that's
true. But Adah Yom Hazeh,
Correct. But this was a generation that was the exception. That's what's so fascinating about it. So the moment they step foot into the land of Israel, and that whole experience of the impact of Chet Egel and Chet Meraglim is now removed. I've removed the shame of Egypt from upon you. We've now renewed the Brit between God and Israel. Now they can fulfill the mitzvah of Brit Milah. Now they can fulfill the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. And the next step is they're going to go journey up to Shechem and renew the blessings and curses and renew the whole covenant between God and Israel. But that's exactly what's so powerful about this idea, is that it wasn't just circumstantial that they couldn't circumcise themselves. The Gemara says it was intentional, that God denied them the opportunity, Nizufimayu. God denied them the opportunity, the right, the ability to fulfill the mitzvah Brit Milah. Fascinating. Now, let's turn the clock back a little bit. You all still with me? Let's go back to Mitzrayim. And one of the assertions is that they didn't just circumcise themselves. They weren't just circumcised when they left Egypt, because for all those generations, for all those years, they actually fulfilled the mitzvah of circumcision. But that rather, there was a moment in the events of Yetziat Mitzrayim in which they actively fulfilled the mitzvah of Brit Milah. I think I shared with you last week the suggestion that that's why many of the Mefarshim say that's why the Korban Pesach, based on the Medrash, the Korban Pesach was taken on the 10th of the month to give them the time between the 10th of the month and the 14th to circumcise themselves on a national scale. It's based on a Medrash. I want to show you that Medrash now. But let's start with a couple of psukim in Yechezkel. Yechezkel refers to Yetziat Mitzrayim in a number of different places. Very famously, because we quoted it at every bris, we quote this pasuk. The description in Perek Tzayin, where the Navi describes Israel in a metaphor as a newborn baby cast aside in the desert, rejected by the nations of the world. Life doesn't change much. And God has compassion over this baby, and God takes it and washes it and prepares it. I passed by and I saw you weltering in your own blood. And I said to you, in your blood you shall live, in your blood you shall live. Which in the pshat of the verse means that even though you are literally lying there in the field in the birth blood of that was created, God says, God promises, little baby Israel, I will care for you. I will take care of you. I will nurture you, and therefore, despite you being mitvoseset b'damayach, altering in your blood, despite that, you shall live. That's the pshat. The drash is that through your blood, b'damayach, you will achieve life. And it connects to verse 7, which describes Israel as entering into maturity, growing into a mature woman, but naked and bare, and so God comes and spreads forth his cloak over the baby in a brit, vavo bebrit itach, like a marriage contract or a marriage brit, that symbol of that chuppah is placing a cloak over the spouse. It's a a reflection of a similar idea in terms of the way we fulfill, we do chuppah today through the mitzvah of the badekin, of the covering of the garment is the veil. Nonetheless, these two verses together, Zayin and Chet, that's the pshat of these two psukim. The Medrash picks up on this in a different context. So now I'm going to jump to the Medrash. Medrash is in the Mechilta. Take the animal on the 10th of the month and hold on to it until the 14th. Medrash is dealing with the question of why Bnei Yisrael had to take the korban. Why did we have to take the korban Pesach 4 days prior to its to the slaughter? Rabbi Matya ben Chavash Omer, it says in the pasuk in Yechezkel I just showed you, "Ve'evor alayich ve'erech v'ine et itech et dodim." You have reached the age of maturity. Came the moment that God had promised to fulfill the redemption of his of Abraham's children. And Israel was naked of any mitzvah. They had no merit by which they could merit to be redeemed. As it says, similar verse just prior, maturity you had reached, but without the clothing that would reflect the mitzvot of the Torah. Eriyah min ha-mitzvot. Natan lehem ha-makom shtei mitzvot. Immediately God gave them two mitzvot to engage in. What are they? Mitzvat Pesach u-mitzvat Milah. Pesach and Milah. The same two mitzvot which we fulfilled when we entered into the land of Israel, God gave them in Egypt. She'itasku behem kedei she'igalu. That they should fulfill so that they would merit to be redeemed. And that's the reference to mit posesa b'damayich, v'omalach b'damayich chayi, v'omalach b'damayich chayi. You, the two bloods, the blood of Pesach and the blood of Milah. Gam at b'dam britech shilachti asirayach mibor ein mayim bo. Zechariah talks about the dam brit, the blood of the covenant. That is part of the symbol of that the contract. Like the Brit Ben Abtarim, where you divide the animals, or like Moshe sprinkling the blood of the Korban over the people of Israel after Mamre HaSinai. There's this notion of Dam Brit as a sign of the covenant. L'chach hikdim ha-ketuv likachato shel Pesach kodem l'shkitato 4 yamim, she'ein notnim schar ela al ha-maaseh. Therefore, they needed 4 days. Because even though they had accepted the mitzvah Brit Milah, that's not enough. They actually have to do it. And you need 4 days, 3 days to heal, and the 4th day to fulfill the mitzvah of the Korban Pesach. So it's fascinating. The Gemara picks, the Mishnah, the Medrash picks up exactly this reference in Yehoshua. The Bnei Yisrael were not circumcised in the desert, but they were in Egypt. But not because it was a Masoret back from the days of Abraham and therefore they were all circumcised. No, they had to become, they had to accept it upon themselves. It's a fascinating question. What happened to the Masoret from Abraham's day? That we'll see in a moment. This idea, this connection between Pesach and Milah, which is explicit in the text here in Sefer Yehoshua, this is what I'm trying to... Maybe I missed a point that I wanted to explain. One of the questions that often arises is where do you get midrashic connections from? Right? The Medrash links the mitzvah of Brit Milah to the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. So beyond the fact that, besides the fact that Milah and Pesach are interconnected halachically, one is a prerequisite for the other. They're the only two mitzvot which one is a prerequisite for the other. You have to be circumcised to fulfill the mitzvah of Korban Pesach. They're also the only two positive mitzvot for which their negation violates the concept or is punishable by karet. Karet is usually a punishment, being cut off from the nation, is usually a punishment reserved for negative violation of negative commandments, certain negative commandments. There are only two examples of a negation of a positive commandment being punishable by karet. They are mitzvah They are the mitzvot of Mila and Pesach. There's a whole host of halachic connections between Pesach and Mila. But the most direct connection comes from Sefer Yoshua. Before they could fulfill the mitzvah of Pesach, they all underwent Shenit, for a second time, a national circumcision. Shenit because they had done this already in Egypt. And that's exactly what the Medrash is picking up on. Even though the story of Brit Milah is not recorded in the story of the Exodus, there is enough evidence to indicate that that, in fact, it was a major component. One step further, which is really quite extraordinary, is this Medrash in Pirkei Avot Rabbi Eliezer. Medrash says the following, similar idea, but it adds one nuance. Mikana talamed, shebnei Yaakov hayu numulim. So Bnei Yaakov, Yaakov's children when they came down to Mitzrayim, Abraham's grandchildren, great-grandchildren, they certainly were all circumcised. Umalu livnehem, and they circumcised their own children. V'nechilum l'chok olam, and it was a part of the Masoret of Jewish life from the days of Abraham. So what happened to it? Ad she'amad paro v'gazar alehem gzerot kashot u'mana mehem brit milah. I'm going to share with you another possibility in a minute, but here the Medrash says that the reason why they stopped doing Brit Milah was because Paro wouldn't let them. Paro denied them that as part of a host of decrees. Somewhat anachronistic because Paro's decrees were not religious in nature. They were chronologically appropriate for the story of perhaps of Hanukkah, but nonetheless, that's where we start our story. Ufiyom shiatzu Yisrael miMitzrayim, nimolu kulam migadol v'ad katan. When they left Egypt that day or that time, they all circumcised themselves, as it says, kimulimayu kol ha'am hayotzim miMitzrayim. That's our verse in Sefer Yoshua, Perek Hey. So for those 4 days, they were had fulfilled the mitzvah of Brit Milah on day, let's say, 11, and then 12, 13 was recovery, and then Korban Pesach on the 14th. What were they supposed to do with the dam, with the blood of the Korban Pesach? Put it on the doorposts, correct? But the previous Medrash linked the blood of Korban Mitzvah Milah and the blood of, as a dam brit, as a sign of the covenant, and the mitzvah of the Korban Pesach. Says the Pirkei Avot Rabbi Eliezer, it says, unbelievable. V'hayu lokhim dam milah v'dam pesach. They took the blood of the mitzvah milah and the blood of the mitzvah pesach. V'hayu notnim al mashkof batehem. And they put both of them on their doorpost. They mixed them together. And therefore, when God came to smite the Egyptian firstborn, v'ra'ad dam habrit v'dam hapesach. And he saw the mitzvah, the two bloods mixed. That's the pasuk in Yechezkel. There's two bloods there, Dam Brit and Dam Pesach. And that's how the Medrash continues. Why twice does it say B'damai Chayi? B'zchut Dam Brit Milah B'dam Pesach Ga'alti Etchem Mitzrayim. In the merit of the Dam of Brit Milah and Dam Pesach, I redeemed you from Egypt. And as a nod to the comment that was made a moment ago, ubizchutam atem atidim ligael besof machut v'it. And the same two mitzvot will be at the core of the merit of the Jewish people when it comes time for the final redemption in the future. A fascinating observation. The notion that Milah and Pesach are interconnected mitzvot. We think of Yetziat Mitzrayim, we think of the Korban Pesach, we think of all that it means and all that it represents. But the reality is that both midrashically, as well as textually, if you include our chapter, Sefer Yoshua, suddenly into the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim, we have a whole new element, which is this national experience of Brit Milah. Now Chazal make a big deal out of the fact that they took the Korban Pesach and they tied it to the bedposts, and they said for 4 days we're going to hold on to this animal, and we're going to prepare it for public slaughter, and you're not going to be able to stop us. Here Bnei Israel had done exactly what the people of Shechem had done when they wanted to marry Yaakov's children. They underwent a national circumcision. How easy it would have been for Egypt to literally have gone in and slaughtered us. And they didn't. So, and part of the nace of that moment in history was not just the fact that we took the Korban Pesach, but that we fulfilled the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, of Brit Milah, in order to do so. So the other piece that I wanted to explore for a few minutes is, what is it about these two mitzvot that connect them so? They're so interconnected, as I said before. Positive mitzvot, which is an isekares, one is a prerequisite for the other. Kol ha'el yochamo. There's even notion, and this is really astounding. There's a Rashi at the beginning of Bamidbar, and that same story of the Korban Pesach, that says, by Pesach Sheni, actually, that, let me show you the context of this pasuk. Let's go back to, so beginning of Bamidbar Tet, we have the first Korban Pesach in the Midbar, year two, and then afterwards you have the mitzvah of the Pesach Sheni. Pesach Sheni, if somebody's unable to fulfill the mitzvah of Pesach because they're Tameh, they have a makeup, they have an opportunity to make it up. Right? Interesting observation. Pasuk Dalet, v'chi yagur itchem ger, if there be a foreigner who lives amongst you, a ger, v'asa Pesach la'Hashem, and he wants to bring a Korban Pesach, ki chukat ha-Pesach u'kemishpato ken yaseh. He has to bring the Korban Pesach in accordance with its proper laws. Chukat achat yelachem b'lager u'lezrach ha'aretz. One law for you, for the stranger, meaning for the ger, the convert, and for the citizen of the land. What is this verse referring to? So Rashi, on that verse, that's fascinating. It's based on a Gemara, but Rashi quotes the following. Yachol kol hamitgayer ya'ase pesach miyad. I might have entertained the possibility that every convert, when they convert to Judaism, no matter when, if they convert in January, if they convert in December, they convert in Tishrei, they convert in Tevet, doesn't matter. I might have thought that they should immediately bring a Korban Pesach. Talmud lamar, chuka achat, therefore the Torah says, no, one law. Yeah, one law. V'chi agur ger v'asa pesach, uva et lasot pesach im chavei rav. He will bring the Korban Pesach, but you'll have to do so together with everybody else. You can't bring the Korban Pesach by yourself. What kind of an observation, what kind of a havamin is it? What kind of an entertaining thought is it that a potential convert who converts in any month of the year should immediately have to bring a Korban Pesach? He doesn't have to immediately, if he converts on a Monday, he doesn't have to keep Shabbos on Tuesday. What do you mean he should have to right away bring a Korban Pesach? Pesach is part of a celebration of a holiday. Why should he bring a Korban Pesach? The answer is that Pesach is much more than the celebration of a holiday. Pesach is a sign, is a ceremony in which we undergo a covenantal commitment with God. Pesach is a part of the Brit with God, as a people, as a nation. There is a mitzvah the ger has to fulfill right away. He has to fulfill all the mitzvot, but he has to fulfill the mitzvah of Brit Milah, at least a male convert. He has to fulfill the mitzvah of Brit Milah right away. That's entering into the covenant. Says Rashi, it's possible that we would consider the Pesach as part of entering into the covenant as well, part of the requirement of conversion. Says the Torah, no, you can't separate the ritual covenantal meaning of Pesach from the holiday of Pesach. So he's going to have to wait until the holiday in order to fulfill Pesach with everybody else. But the notion, the entertained idea that he should have to fulfill Pesach right away as a prerequisite to conversion. Because the notion, the bridge between God and Israel is anchored on two mitzvot that are the symbol of that bridge. Dam Pesach v'dam Milah.
Why? We don't have any signs of Pesach being Brit, not the language, like if we had the language, Asiti Briti, Karati Briti, whatever we had in all the other Britot that we had before. So where does it come, the idea that it's a Brit?
I'd have to do a whole shiur just for that question.
So I want to hear that.
Trace every reference to Pesach in Tanakh.
Okay.
And what you'll find is that there are certain moments when they fulfilled Pesach. Chizkiyahu does this massive spiritual reformation in the temple. And he brings up Korban Pesach, but he brings up Korban Pesach in the wrong month. He brings up Korban Pesach in the month of Iyar. Why? Because you can't have a spiritual reformation and a reenactment of the Brit with God without a Korban Pesach. It's not possible. Yoshiyahu makes a Korban Pesach after his spiritual reformation. Ezra, when he comes back from the Jewish people from the exile with the Jewish people into the land of Israel, immediately he brings a Korban Pesach. Because Pesach is, on the one hand, a ritual, it's part of the holiday, and on the other hand, it is a part of the Brit between God and Israel from the moment we left Egypt. It's connected to Brit Milah. The two are interconnected. The two are inseparable. Let me take this one step further. Let me show you where this is philosophically. It's a fascinating idea, but you're right. I left out that piece of it because I wanted to kind of contain this to one shiur. But if you,
I'm not following. I'm missing a piece there.
Yeah, I hear. If you send me an email, I'll send you a list of all the places that Korban Pesach appears in Tanakh, and you'll see every one of them is associated with a spiritual revolution and a reenactment of the bridge with God. It's really very, very powerful. In fact, some of them, it says, for example, by Yoshiyahu, I believe, that they had not fulfilled such a Pesach since the days of Yoshua ben Nun. It didn't mean that they didn't fulfill mitzvah Korban Pesach, but Pesach as not just as a ritual, but as a reenactment of the Brit with God. Right? Those are moments in history. They don't happen every year. Medrash in Shmot Rabbah, the famous Medrash, talks about B'nai Yisrael, when they left Mitzrayim, they were idolatrous. You avdin avodat kochavim. B'nai Yisrael had stooped to levels of idolatry. How do we know that B'nai Yisrael were idolatrous in Egypt? How do we know that B'nai Yisrael, over the course of the 400 years or 200 years that they lived in Egypt, had assimilated spiritually into the culture of Mitzrayim? How do we know that? So I'll give you two proofs. The Medrash offers one. It's a pasuk in Yechezkel. Here's the pasuk in Yechezkel. It's worth looking at them. Parakaf. Let's jump to, one second. Sorry. Didn't mean to do that. Parakaf pasukat. Okay. Yechezkel says to Bnei Israel, "B'yom b'chari b'Yisrael, the day that I chose Israel, v'esayadi lezer beit Yaakov, and I lifted up my hand, I took an oath to the children of Yaakov, ivadalehem be'eretz Mitzrayim, I made myself known to them while they were still in Egypt. V'esayadi lehem lemo ani Hashem elokachem, and I swore to them, I said, I am your God. V'yom ha'unasati yadi lehem lotziyam be'eretz Mitzrayim, I wanted to take them out of Egypt. I wanted to take him to the land that I promised, the land of Zavat Chalav Udvash, the land flowing with milk and honey, the land which is Tzvi Hilachol HaRatzot, the glory land, beloved of all lands. I made one request. For Amar Lehem, Ish, you could say, Navish Lichu, V'gulalei Mitzrayim Malti Tamau. I said, get rid of the idols. Cast away the abominations of your eyes. Cast away the defilements of Egypt. give up what you had stooped to for these years, which was the assimilation and the acculturation into Egypt. Vayom Ruvi, and they rebelled against me. Velo avu lishmo elai, they didn't want to listen to me. Isha chikutze nehem lo ishlichu, they did not reject the abominations of their eyes. Gilulei mitzrayim lo azavu, and they didn't abandon the idols of Egypt. Vomar lishpocha mati alehem, lechlot lechalot pibahem, betoch eres mitzrayim. I was so angry at them, I wanted to destroy them while they were still in Egypt. But you know what? Aslaman Shemi, I acted in accordance with, in, for the sake of my name, my presence in the world. I didn't want to destroy them or profane my name in the sight of the nations. And therefore, I took them out of Egypt. And I brought them to the Midbar. And I gave them laws and statutes. They should live by them. I gave them Shabbos. I gave them mitzvot. The rest of the story is the rest of Jewish history, in which we didn't learn that lesson, but that's a separate part of the Navi. Go back to the Medrash. Quotes this pasuk in Yechezkel, that they were souped in idolatry, and says, I wanted them to reject that idolatry. How? By the midst of the Korban Pesach, draw back and take this animal on the 10th of the month, says the Pasuk. Medrash says, Klamar, mishchu yedechem me'avodat kochavim u'kru lechem tzon. Draw back from the idolatry, take this animal, v'shechatu aleihem shamitzrayim v'yasu v'pesach, and slaughter the god of Egypt, the deity of Egypt, in their eyes, and make the Pesach. And that would be the method by which God would hover over them and protect them. You shall be redeemed. In other words, Medrash makes it very clear that the Korban Pesach had a defiance to it. It was an act of defiance against the idolatry of Egypt. And therefore, whereas we will fulfill the mitzvah of Korban Pesach every year as a reenactment of that Korban, there are moments in our history when we will actually be called upon to reject the cultural assimilation into the world around us and reaffirm our brit with God as we did in Egypt. Because that's what the Korban Pesach was. It was an enactment of a covenant, of a commitment. And at the core of that covenant was the abandonment of idolatry of Mitzrayim. Hence the tzon, hence the notion of taking the animal. Now, again, according to the Medrash, you have to throw Brit Milah into that same mix. So somebody asked me before, but wait a second, but they were circumcised for all the years that they from Avraham. So look at this Medrash. This is unbelievable. Source 11. Rabbanan patchim pitcha lehaikra b'Hashem bagadu ki banim zarim eladu atay yochlei mechodesh et chalkehem. They betrayed God. They begot foreign children. A month will devour them with portions. Okay, whatever the pasuk in Hashem means is not our issue. Pshat of it. Our issue is the drash. Lelamedcha. Kishemet Yosef heferu brit mila. Says the Medrash, they clearly had to fulfill the mitzvah of Brit Milah when they left Egypt, because that's what the Pasuk says in Yehoshua. And therefore, and they were circumcised when they came down to Egypt. So what happened in between? Says the Medrash, in between, they began to assimilate. If they were assimilating spiritually into idolatry by the previous Medrash says, right, by taking the idolatry of Yechezkel, taking the idolatry of Egypt, they were also assimilating physically. Amunia Kemitzrim, we want to be like Egypt. We want to be like Egypt.
It's contradicting the Midrash about Bizchut Mani Galu Bnei Israel, Shelo Shinu Et Shmam, Lo Shinu Et Shmam. So it's like...
Okay, perfect. Now you've hit the core. Which is it? Did we stoop to the 49th level of Tumah? Did we adopt idolatry? Did we abandon Brit Milah? We want to be like Mitzrayim. Or did we preserve our language and our dress and our culture and stay true to our identity? Which was it?
Interesting.
See, what's the answer? It's a fascinating question. This is really at the core of Pesach. And next time you come, when you come to the Pesach Seder, go back to these notes. This is at the core of Pesach. Here's an interesting question. Where did Bnei Yisrael live?
In Goshen. They lived separately.
They lived in Goshen.
So they did
separately.
Keep it.
One second.
They did
one second.
keep
Hang,
it.
Hang on a second. Let me take this down step, one step at a time.
Okay.
Why did they live in Goshen? They lived in Goshen because when they came down to Mitzrayim, Yaakov comes before Paro and Yosef convinces them to say that they are shepherds and therefore they need to remain separate. They need to remain separate in the land of Goshen. Fine. And if they're in the land of Goshen, how do I know that the land that in Goshen they were separate from the rest of Egypt? Look at the plagues. How many times, actually I'm going to stop sharing for a second. How many times in the plagues of Egypt does it say that God would spare the land of Goshen where my people live? Right? The middle three, the Tzach, Hadash, Rechav, if you take a look at it, by Orav, Dever, Shchin, those three plagues was spared, the land of Goshen was spared of those plagues because that's where my people lived. Correct? Wait a second. Then why do they need the blood on the doorposts? Question asked by the Netziv in the Hamikdavah. Why do they need the blood on the doorposts? Pesachti abnei Yisrael b'Mitzrayim, b'nekpot Mitzrayim b'tenu itzil, because the Jews are living side by side, house mixed amongst house and the Egyptians, right?
Because it says,
so which, hang on a second, hang on a second. So which is it? Is it, are we living in Goshen, or are we living in Mitzrayim? The answer is, yes. Jews are never monolithic. We don't all do the same thing. The Jews were told to stay separate in the land of Goshen. Mitzuyanim sham, separate identity, separate culture, separate worlds, to stay separate from the Egyptians. But very quickly, Bnei Yisrael paru, v'yishvitzu, v'yatzmu, v'yibru, v'yatzmu, v'me'od me'od, v'timaleha aratzotam. They began to be fruitful and multiply and swarm. Vayishritzu, says the Kli Yagah. That's a disgusting term to use for Bnei Israel. They swarmed like insects. Vatimaleha aretzotam, and Mitzrayim became filled with them. Rashi says that they started to assimilate into Mitzrayim. They wanted to fill the circuses and the theaters of Egypt. So did they stay in Goshen or did they assimilate into the land of Egypt? The answer is yes. Right? That's exactly the point. We didn't all do the same thing. But the Medrash picks up the fact that therefore when we left Egypt, there had been such an assimilation effort over the years, and it was rejected by Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim rejected it. Let's go back to the text for a second. Kishemet Yosef Efeu Brit Milah Muni Yekam Mitzrayim. All of them? No. Some of them preserved the language, some of them preserved the tongue, but some of them spoke Egyptian, and some of them dressed like an Egyptian, and some of them lived in Egypt. And that's the point. Therefore, yet they had to be circumcised. Once they had tried to assimilate, once they began to enter into Egypt, it's a fascinating insight in the psychology of anti-Semitism. God turned the love of Egypt against us into hatred, and that's essentially how the slavery began, to essentially say to them, if you're not going to remain separate, I'm going to force you to be separate. Right? The very first person to point to Bnei Israel and call them an Am and call them a nation is Paro. Hinei Am Bnei Israel. So I come back to the core of the story, which is that they entered into the land of Israel. They've renewed the Brit with God. And by the way, I have to skip pieces of it, but that's okay. By the way, come back to Bereishit Perek Yud Zayin. When God gave Abraham the Brit of Brit Milah, right, in Bereishit Perek Yud Zayin, and he says to him, I'm going to give you this Brit, I'm going to make you a great nation, and it requires you fulfilling the Brit of Brit Milah. I will make you fruitful and multiply into a great nation. That's what Brit Milah represents, our covenant with God. The notion, the mitzvah of Brit Milah, a Brit is a two-way street, requires two sides of the covenant. Our fulfillment of the mitzvah of Brit Milah is our guarantee to the right to return to the land of Israel. The land of Israel was given to Abraham in reward for the mitzvah of Brit Milah, v'yata briti tishmor. Zot briti asher tishmeru b'ni u'v'nechem imolachem kol zachar. You circumcise your children, and you will represent me, God, will be my servants, and I will give you the land. They're interconnected. The national identity of the Jewish people is defined by the mitzvah Brit Milah and the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, physically and spiritually. And those are the two mitzvot that we fulfill as we enter into the land of Israel under Yehoshua. The very first act is to fulfill the mitzvah of Brit Milah as a prerequisite to then be able to fulfill the mitzvah of Korban Pesach in the land of Israel, and essentially turn the clock back on all that had been lost in the sin of the spies, and the sin of the golden calf, Chepat Mitzrayim. Now we start a new chapter as represented in God as God's people in our land, the land of Israel. That's the message of chapter 5.
Yishal kochacha, Rabbi.
My pleasure. There's a couple of pieces we left off that I didn't get to, kind of loose ends. I will try to fill them in very quickly at the beginning of next week, just so that we have a full picture. It has to do with the nature of Brit Milah and why it's the sign of the covenant, Ot Brit, but we'll address that very quickly. And next week, Bezot Hashem, our plan is to start Chapter 6. If you've joined us for the first time now, welcome aboard. Welcome to the journey. It's going to be a ride, and we continue to explore Sefer Yehoshua. Thank you all for joining us.
Can I just make a comment?
Yes, you may.
I think it's possible to understand Chepat Mitzrayim in another way. Now, Herodotus says that the Egyptians are the first ones to practice circumcision, and he mentions a number of other ancient peoples, meaning that there were a number of them. And also the temples in Egypt also portray art where there's circumcision in there. So it could be that Chepat Mitzrayim means that they were practicing, the Egyptians were practicing circumcision, and the Bnei Yisrael were not. And that was the Chepat.
Okay, it's a possibility. Again, I don't, the Chepat, as is referred to in the context of Brit Milah by Shechem, is the other way around. But as I suggested, and I think it's entirely possible, the Mepharshim kind of do the reverse of that. They say that
You mentioned the Radak, yeah.
Right. But what I'm suggesting is that it's actually referring to the Brit altogether, not the Brit of Brit Milah, but the whole relationship between God and Israel, and that by re-entering both Milah and Pesach together, they're re-engaging that which they lost in the Midbar. So I'm offering a suggestion that kind of avoids the question of whether Egyptians were or weren't circumcised historically. This observation is independent of that.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Have a good
My
day.
My pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very
Rabbi,
much.
Rabbi, that generation is the ones that experienced Matan Torah.
Sorry, say again?
The generation of the desert, even though they may have lost the Brit, but they experienced Matan Torah and said Naaseh v'Nishma.
Until Chet Egel and until Chet Maraglim, correct.
Yeah, but they still were able to build a Mishkan and have sacrifices, so it's not like they didn't have
that's,
any.
That's also debatable, whether the Bechlal had sacrifices in the desert if they didn't have a Korban Pesach. Until Chet HaEgel and until Chet HaMeraglim, you're correct. But once you enter into that domain, God rejects them. Clearly, right? That's the whole point of the story of the they'll die in the Midbar, and there's no communication, there's no nevuah, there's no shechina between the aftermath of the story of Korach and the beginning of Parshat Chukat. There's 38 years of silence. There's no question that that generation was rejected. Despite whatever they had achieved at Matan Torah, they lost subsequent to it.
Uh-huh.
That's unfortunately that's a fact of history in Tanakh, in Chumash, and that I can't avoid. But the notion of renewing that Brit, that's now where we get a.
So if the Brit, if you say that Pesach, Korban Pesach was a Brit, then they did the Korban, like they sacrificed and God took them out of Egypt. Is that the Brit? I mean, is that the
reciprocity. Yes, that's what the Medrash is suggesting. Mishkuku as a prerequisite, two mitzvot became a prerequisite to leave Egypt. Brit Milah and Korban Pesach.
But then if they keep doing Korban Pesach, let's say when they came to Eretz Canaan, then what? Where's the continuation of the Brit?
Separate the mitzvah of the Brit and the significance of renewing that Brit. In other words, there's a mitzvah to do a Korban Pesach every year.
Right.
But it's like when we go through Pesach, we reenact what happened in Mitzrayim. But for them, it wasn't a reenactment. For them, it was real. For them, it was the actual happening. Right? I remember very vividly, this is already post our 1 o'clock time for ending, so you're welcome to sign off, and this is just a conversation, so this is on free time. But I remember very clearly as a child, we had relatives who had been left the Soviet Union and come to America, and barely spoke English, and we certainly didn't speak Russian, and so kind of conducted the Seder in Yiddish, and my broken Yiddish as a child, it was quite an experience. But I remember them sitting there at the Seder for the entire time, and at the end of the Seder, he turned to us, this cousin, and he said to us, "For you, this is a story. For me, for us, this is our first year. This is our story. This is happening to us." So that's exactly the point. For us, every year, it's a story. And we reenact it. But there are times in our history when we needed to renew that Brit with God because we had abandoned it. And those moments, the Pesach served not just as a story, as a reenactment, but actually as a Brit.
But then the real question is the Brit always has to be renewed? Like, for example, with every child that is born, you have a Brit Milah. Or every time you see the Keshet, you know that there won't be a destruction of the world. So,
from that perspective, yes. That's why there's a gear.
I'm missing that piece from you. Then where do I see the two sides of the Brit of Pesach? I don't see that. So, now we don't have Bet Mikdash, so we don't have Korban Pesach. But let's say all the time that we had, where is what God has to do for us to do the two sides of the Brit?
Oh, you're making the assumption that we're going to dictate to God what he has to do for us.
I'm not making any assumption. I'm saying I didn't dictate that Brit. God dictated that Brit. He made those conditions. Yes. So I'm asking, where are the conditions happening?
A Brit isn't necessarily only two-sided. It means that we have a covenantal relationship. God will be our God and we will be his people.
Right.
That's what theologically, in our emuna, that's what the Pesach represents,
the
rejection of idolatry. And right. Physically, as a sign that we carry a sign of avdus to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, which is Brit Milah.
Right.
So I think that where I see it is that the mitzvah Brit Milah is an individual sign of the Brit, and the mitzvah Korban Pesach is a national sign of the Brit. But it's a but they essentially achieve the same thing. They say they carry a banner, and the banner says we are God's people.
Relative to your relatives, Shiransky's family every year has a tekes to remember his freedom from the Soviet Union, from the I have a question. So So Dor HaMidbar, they didn't do Brit Milah. Mm-hmm. So how did they know how to do it?
I'm not sure. I have an answer to that question. I can only assume that if God gave Yeshua instructions on how to make flint knives, he gave him instructions on how to do the mitzvah of Brit Milah.
I mean, they might have had flint knives just for other purposes.
I'm saying, but I would have to assume that the parameters of the mitzvah were given to them. I'm a mohel, so it's a.
I mean, it's hard. I mean, okay, so then you should just have an appreciation for the fact that if you have a whole generation that didn't do it, it's a problem.
And they have to be trained. So I guess God trained Yeshua, gave him a Kabbalah, and here's your first mohel. Rabbi, we're going to stop here. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you so much, Rabbi.
My pleasure. And we will see you all, Bezrat Hashem, next week.
It was fun.
Always.
Yeah.
Always.